Well, I think when events like last Friday happened in Paris or 9/11 in 2001, it acts like a moment of truth for people, and they begin to ask questions like, how do we get here and what led up to this? And you'll have people saying, you know, short-term answer is to find the people that perpetrated this and take them out. And you'll have also people saying we need a more strategic look at things. And you'll also have people bringing in various agendas into this situation. The other night I was listening to TV and I saw Marine Le Pen, who is now the third generation of the Le Pens, come on. And she was saying, this clearly proves that we've been having the wrong approach to migrants, and it's clearly time to reverse that, to close the doors and to send them back home, those who don't want to be French and who want to have different customs. We have to put an end to that, and that's really the solution to it. And I also remember 9/11 reading subsequently that Donald Rumsfeld, who was, I think, Secretary of State or some such thing at the time, he's reported to have said 9/11 is the ideal opportunity for us to get Iraq. In other words, he wanted to get Iraq anyway, and he had the agenda, and he hitched onto this event. So all sorts of voices join in when these moments of truth happen through terrorism. And we just thought it's very important that other voices come to the table as well. And that's why on Saturday we have a poet, James Harper, speaking. He's spoken on violence in radio before, and he's most eloquent. We have a musician. We have a social scientist, and then two theologians, hopefully to bring new perspectives and maybe even deeper perspectives to the conversation that is so relevant and so necessary.
Yeah, I mean, almost everybody has something to say on the matter. Yeah. Because it's something that touches everybody's lives, and yeah, everybody feels like they have the answer. So I suppose, how can those people, like, you know, say a theologian, what will the theologian or the social scientist bring that will be maybe more inquiring than maybe a regular person on the street looking at it? Like, what can we bring to this?
Everybody has a word to say about the Muslim threat, extreme ideology which Muslims constantly tell us should not be identified with the Muslim faith, and that's certainly true. But again, if you listen to the commentators, it usually goes something like this. The more strategic political commentators are saying something, well, we mustn't just think of taking out the baddies, we must also think of counteracting this terrible ideology and stop the radicalization of our young Muslim people. Sometimes you'll hear Muslim voices saying, but you must also rethink foreign policy. That has something to do with it. And nearly always the conversation stops there. Because if we were to rethink foreign policy, its implications are just frightening, really, frankly. The implications of trade with the Middle East, the implications of acknowledging some of the colonialisms of the past and the racism of the past and the present. So fear comes into it and affects us much more deeply, and to get beyond that fear to a truer hope is something that we would hope theologians can make some contribution to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people have talked about the hypocrisy in a sense of the response, mm-hmm, that if people die on Western soil, if people die in Europe or America, everybody's up in arms, everybody's talking about it, but we don't, as you say, talk about the attacks that are happening so much in foreign lands that are the direct result, as the people have pointed out, of our foreign policies.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, there was a bomb went off in Beirut and killed some 50 people just 3 days before the Parisian bomb, and it's an item on the news, but it's an item that doesn't come home to us or cause the sort of moment of truth that I'm talking about. In some ways that's understandable because we all live locally as well as globally. But in other ways, the kind of fear that I spoke about earlier, that curtails our ability to think more deeply, is tremendously damaging in the world that we live in. And I think it's incumbent on people like theologians to be able to say that it isn't just a couple of baddies and it isn't just an ideology that is indeed very terrifying. It's also systemic structures of injustice and poverty and racism and colonialism. And witness has to be given that the situation is an interlocking complexity of evil as well as an isolated evidence of evil people. And the interlocking complexity of evil needs to be recognized in order that we can begin to nurture hope that is deeper than optimism.
Yes, you mentioned that. You talked about hope without optimism. What in what sense? What do you mean about that?
Well, I must tell you that that's a borrowed title. It's borrowed from a wonderful book by a good friend of mine, Terry Eagleton, published this year. He's titled a book, Hope Without Optimism. And Terry would argue that the optimist is essentially someone who trusts the soundness of the present, who's a conservative, actually. So the optimist sees a benign future rooted in a benign present. But supposing the present isn't benign, supposing you need to go deeper and you need to see a systemic interlocking of evil that has built up through centuries of human culture, then the optimist is leading you away from where the truth lies. I think Terry says at one stage, optimism is a typical component of ruling class ideologies. And Terry would be arguing that we need a true hope that can acknowledge even loss and destruction and say it's unavoidable, but refuse to capitulate and still find some way of expressing a hope that doesn't have compromise with the interlocking complexity. Not easy to do. And again, it's very important to say that the people who bear witness to such hope come from all walks of life and indeed from all religions. But it's part of the role of theology to articulate the need for that kind of witness to true hope and, as it were, highlight it against the darkness of the times.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the fear and the fear that we had to go deeper. And I read that people were saying, you know, the attacks in Paris were an attack on our lifestyle and on the way we live. And in many ways, maybe there's a truth in that because our lifestyles are quite opulent. They are, as you say, the result of years of colonialism and accumulated wealth and injustice and inequality. I mean, is that the kind of thing that you think we're afraid to really look at and to take a hard look at?
I think precisely. And I mean, when you say we're afraid, I'm as much afraid as anybody else, because we don't just stand alone here talking about this. We have families and they are in danger, if you like, if we begin to look at reality with a sober realism. You know the kind of piece of advice that the song gives, always look on the bright side of life. That's the optimistic thing, you see, and that's fine. But the other side of it is don't look where the monsters are. And the trouble is that if you follow that advice and don't look where the monsters are, the catastrophe can creep up upon you. And indeed it can creep up upon your children. So that's why, although I'm deeply afraid of going deep into the analysis of our current way of life, because it is very disturbing and troubling, on the other hand, there's a moral realism that requires one to do so for the sake of the future. Actually, a very good example of this is the business of climate change and that very fine document that came out from the Vatican and Pope Francis on climate change. I was reading Paul, I think Krugerman is his name, is an American commentator that appears in the Irish Times once a week. And he had very eloquent commentary on the terror events in Paris, tracing them back, linking them with the 9/11 events. But he ends up by saying, remember, our real challenge is climate change. And of course, and that's why I say one needs many voices around the table to recognize that we do have to go beyond optimism and find sources of hope that can sustain us with the very big questions that are around.
And for people who want to come along, is it, can they turn up on the day, or do they need to book tickets?
No, people can turn up on the day. We have, I think, 5 lectures planned. First of all, there'll be a theologian from Heathrop in London, Michael Kerwin. Then there's Gillian White, who is a professor of political science here in the Irish School of Ecumenics. And then we've Dr. Oisin Blunney, who is from DCU, talking about music, in God's name, music and meaning in the imperial and post-war Britain. Then James Harper, then there's lunch, a light lunch. James Harper, the poet, after that, and then myself to round things off. And there's a light lunch in between, and there's a €20 charge to it, but you can certainly turn up on the day.